Hello and welcome to yet another episode of Fool's Daily. I'm Conrad and I'm joined again by my fellow Tainlorn Club member, Des Brennan.
Hello.
Or should I call you a what are they called? The henchman,
yeah,
pressganger so, equivalent of...
Well, they haven't really... Megalith hasn't got round to making it official yet, but they're going to have a kind of an outrider or a pressganger or a henchman program that's coming up, which I'll certainly try and go in for as soon as it's up. But I try and do what I can already, you know, to promote the game, and, you know, here I am.
So today we're going to talk about Godslayer again, but we're going to concentrate more on how the game plays and how you put your list or your force together. So let's start with list building, because one of the unique things I think about the game is that your lord character or your leader character, you know, that's paraphrasing it, has a number of item slots that are and options that are available to him, which is a great way of sort of customizing and making list creation change and different and variable.
Right. I mean, you and I have both played, you know, games in the past where there was that customizable aspect, like Warhammer Fantasy. We both played a lot and we really enjoyed, and you know, it was always very exciting to try and come up with item configurations to make your character a bit of a tough guy. And obviously we're both Malifaux players as well. Now in second edition, there's certainly customization options with upgrades.
Yeah.
So for us, that's a real selling point for the game, and that's something that is in, you know, is inherent in Godslayer. So at the end of each faction's rules, there's an item section and a spell section where you can kind of configure your character model, some of your character models, and certainly your warlord, to have a specific set of attacks or abilities, and they will generally have a number of themes as well. So does it make your warlord, you know, hit hard, or does it make him a bit crafty or a bit sneakier with his moves and his continuous effects and stuff like that? And that really means that you get to extend the shelf life, as it were, of the same model by using it in multiple different ways.
Yep, so I think the sort of leader figures all have armor, talisman, potion, and weapon options. Is that right?
Yeah, it's 99% right. I mean, there are some wizard lords who...
don't have them.
Who don't believe in the wearing of armor. They believe in the wearing of, like, a toga.
Onesies.
Onesies, yeah. And they think that their gods will keep them safe, and, you know, unless I'm running them, that tends to happen. but yeah, that's right. So they tend to have the similar kind of item brackets.
Yep.
What those items do, wildly different.
Yep. And then I know for my magic users, because I play the Bane Brood, which is the Beastman Chaos type faction. My magic users have various lists of spells, and they can choose one type of magic and pay points cost for a number of spells depending on what you want to do. And there's offensive magic, there's buffing magic. I can only speak for them, but you play many, many more factions.
Yeah, I've been known to dabble. So yeah, magic is another one of those customizable things. There are spell lists. Sometimes there's a limitation on the lower level magic casters. They may only know, you know, a couple of spells from one very particular branch, but the better magic casters, the magic lords, pretty much can pick and choose where they know their spells. And there's some very powerful offensive magic and the ability to do damage at range, and that's combined with some really good buffing spells. And as I kind of alluded to in our the last episode, buffing is very important in the game. So you have to make a choice to, do I go all offensive, do I go all defensive, or how do I make that mix work? But there's so many different spells in there that you've got quite a lot of choices.
Yep. Everything comes with a stat card in terms of the units and figures, and on those cards we have a points value. The gear or the items all have a points value, the spells have a points value. So essentially this is how you build your list, and I believe the standard game that Megalith are saying is a good game size to play is 300 points.
That's right. And when you think about a normal game, a warlord very easily comes to 60 to 90 points. So, mm-hmm. You know, that's quite a large percentage of your force right there. And units are generally start from anything from 50 to 100 when they get to their maximum capacity, and monsters tend to be 30 to 50 points. Solos or characters tend to be from 20 to 40 points. So they all have, you know, the points difference aren't wildly that different, but you still get quite a bit in, even though you've got this, you know, big character in there, or some, you know, if you don't want it to go so big, you can even get more units and more monsters and support models in there. So you get a nice range of different abilities and different types of model, from the characters to the units and the monsters, which all kind of behave slightly differently and are using their abilities in slightly different ways. So you've got a nice rounded force, even with a small amount of models.
So you can, essentially what you can do is gear or flavour a list in different ways, depending on what you've got equipment-wise and unit-wise, which is a great thing, I think, in the game as well. It gives the game a different feel every time you play it.
For sure, and even within the factions, they have these concepts of sub-factions where
yep.
if you take all of the model or many of your models from the similar sub-faction, they all get more benefits for being in that close, you know, faction-specific group. Or
yep.
you can mix and match, because sometimes the abilities are very powerful when you cross the lines of the sub-faction. So even within a faction where, you know, it's still the first book, there's only a limited amount of characters and units, there's a lot of variation even then. And it's only going to improve as they release book two and book three, and hopefully they keep going to keep doing this.
This was a Kickstarter game, wasn't it, originally? Or they were producing and they used Kickstarter to help fund it a bit
more? I think it's one of those springboard games where they might have had the rule book ready and they had everything in place, and they just needed a bit of a cash injection to get them
yeah.
to the next level. But it was a Kickstarter, unfortunately, I wasn't a part of, and I really regret it, because it seemed like
yeah.
one of those great deal Kickstarters. So, you know, if you were behind that, then good luck to you, and yeah. you have my envy.
I missed it as well. So we've built our list. One thing I should say is that the game is a no pre-measuring game.
That's right. And unlike War Machine, you can't measure. There isn't a specific ability to measure within at least a set distance, like your control area or anything
yeah.
like that.
So none of this pseudo measuring.
Nope, you've just got to have a good eye for it. And the
yep.
ranges are pretty short most of the time, so you've got to have a good eye from anything from 6 inches to 12 inches.
That's me. That's kept me out then.
Well, good eyes, yeah.
Yeah, the missiles are not humongously huge ranges there. It's, yeah, as you said, 6 to 12 inches, if that at all.
Yeah. Missiles can go farther, but what I like about this game is the kind of little realistic elements they try to introduce into what is obviously a fantasy game rule set, where if you shoot your bows or your missile weapons beyond their normal threat range, you can do that, but they get weaker and you get less accurate, which is kind of nice and realistic, I think.
Yeah. So no pre-measuring. We have the traditional sort of deployment type stuff based, but that's, you know, there's obviously things behind that in terms of there's a concept of a leadership and a number of unit cards that you have on the table, adding modifiers to that startup role. But once we've deployed, how do we actually activate stuff? How do we play or move or fight in the game?
Okay, so every unit or model has its own unit card, which is similar to many of the games that we're all currently playing. On that card, it has a couple of important stats for working out who goes when and how much they can do when they go, and that's leadership. And every turn you kind of roll a lead check against each other, and the kind of the highest roll plus the leadership gets to choose to either be the first to activate a model or a single unit, or to allow the opponent to do that. And then if you're the second or subsequent player in each game round, you get to activate up to two things. So there's a benefit for going first, which is you get the jump on someone. But in this game, there's still a benefit for going second, and that's you get to activate more things.
Yep.
You can combo up. Each unit card also has a number of action stat. It has an act stat, and that tells you how many action counters they get. You spend action counters to move, to make attacks, to use your inherent abilities, provided they cost something and they're not free. And so every unit or individual model has its own resource pool, and you've got to try and figure out, okay, do I use these actions to move because I can use one action token to do one move, for example, or do I make an attack, which tends to cost two or three of your action tokens? And when you think that most models have on average 4 or 5 action tokens. Making an attack for 2 or 3 tokens is a lot of your resource for that turn. So sometimes you have to think about, do I position myself for the next turn, or do I use my inherent abilities that might benefit me or allied units, or do I just try and whack someone over the head with a stick?
So this is the similarity to Malifaux, where models have a certain number of AP, but the act is the term that's used in Godslayer, and there are limitations on how far you can move based on the type of unit or infantry or what you are.
Yep.
What else can you do with the action points? You said that you can fight as well with it. How does that work?
So for example, on the model's card, every model will have an attack of some kind, or almost every model in the game has an attack of some card, and it will list what type of attack is it. Is it a missile attack? Is it a melee attack? Or a magic attack? They're the 3 types of normal attacks. And it will give you a cost in action tokens that you have to spend to declare this attack. And then it will tell you the range of the attacks. If it's melee, it will be in 1 or 2 inches, which is the regular ranges of the game. If it's missile, it can be, you know, anything up to 10, 12 can get some bows in the game that go that far. Or if it's magic, maybe it will be a mixture of the two. And it will tell you the power of the attack. So once you've spent your action tokens, you've called the attack, you roll 2 dice and you add that to the attacking stat. So if it's a melee attack, you'll use your melee stat, missile attack, missile stat, magic attack, magic stat. And you compare the subtotal of that value plus the dice roll against the defense or the defensive stat of whomever you're targeting.
Yep.
There are a couple of exceptions in there. So magic's can be a bit different. You don't necessarily target defense with magic. A magic bolt, like a magic attack that a unit might have, would maybe target defense, but there are some spells that kind of target your magic value.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can kind of beat your magic value plus the complexity that's written on the spell, then the spell goes off. So those spells tend to be a bit more powerful.
Okay, so it's look at your stats, roll some dice, look at the defensive stat essentially, and away we go, sort of thing.
So in that respect, it has, you know, things like War Machine is very much kind of comparing stats against roles and abilities. And on the other hand, you know, you're paying for them in the kind of Malifaux AP resource concept. So it's a hybridization of the two that makes it quite interesting.
So once everything's activated, the round, that turn is over, isn't it, essentially, and you have to re-roll for who goes first in the subsequent turns. The game is a 6-turn game, I believe, isn't it?
That's right. Most scenarios, as far as I'm aware, the ones that I've played anyway, which is a few of them, tend to be a maximum of 6 turns. Very rarely does the game kind of peter out before then. Usually we're still knocking it around on turn 6 trying to figure out who's won on the scenario, but it doesn't go on any longer.
Yeah, so it doesn't go on forever, which is another great thing I like about it. It's captured as such, so you can play your game, play the number of turns, and it's done and dusted.
Yeah.
And you work out who's won the scenario or whatever, because it quite some of these go to essentially points values for what you've killed. One thing we should probably mention is that the cards are essentially laminated. No, they're not laminated. You need to put them in pockets, don't you?
I would advise doing that because,
yeah,
like some other games, you have to kind of mark on the cards when units take damage.
Yeah.
So it would be a good idea if you can put it in pouches or laminate it, but, you know, I'm a laminating freak. I like to laminate everything.
I've gone pockets this time.
Yeah, you would.
There are a number of scenarios in the rule books varying in complexity, dare I say it?
Yes, I mean, I can't remember exactly how many there are, so I'm just kind of quickly checking in the rule book. But
I think there's 6, actually, but it might be more.
It's 8, in fact, I think, provided I can read my Roman numerals correctly. So there are 8 scenarios, and they range from scenario 1, which is beat each other to death, and whoever kills the most is kind of the winner, to really complex scenarios that change the game massively, and what you're fighting for and how you fight, you have to think in a different, completely different way.
Yeah.
So you've got everyone catered to. You've got the people that just enjoy, you know, having a beer and pretzels moment and rolling dice and shouting as they kill each other's models. And you've got people that can work out the best strategies for these particular quirky little missions that you get towards the end of the scenario. So, you know, good range of things to fight over.
Yes, so you've got fluff, You've got a competitive sort of just having a fight against each other, and then you've just got your story type stuff as well, I suppose, you know.
Yep. So I think the games designers have said many times about this game that they're trying to make a game that's got very good competitive rules, but that doesn't preclude you from having friendly games with it. It just means that there's no need to roll a d6 to see who's right this time. The rules should cover all of the situations, and you know, you don't have to argue about rules or consult the rule book, you know, for things that aren't going to be dealt with. You can just get on and have a great game and, you know, get your Necromancer Romans out.
Great. So hopefully that's given you a flavour of God Slayer the game. So Des, if people want to actually view a game being played, is that possible?
Oh yeah, that's certainly possible. I have a number of games recorded which I put up on my YouTube channel. If you want to see my handsome face and the handsome face of someone else I might be currently talking to, then you can go to YouTube and look for the channel Games What I Played, which is GamesWhatiPlayed, or not all as one word, or each of them's an individual word. Or you can search for GWIP and put in Godslayer, and you'll probably find some of my videos in there.
And then subscribe. We've got quite a few
of course,
games up there.
You know, subscribe and like, I think you're supposed to say those things.
And there's quite a few Godslayer games as well as other games on there as well. So
yeah, put a little bit of Malifaux and whatever I can get my hands on, get a player to play against me and let themselves be recorded. Not sexually, of course. Well, not yet.
Okay, I've been Conrad.
And I've not been Conrad.
Thanks very much, Des.
No problem. Bye.
Bye.
You can contact Fools Daily on Twitter, we're at Fools_Daily, or via email, foolsdaily@outlook.com.